Take Trotsky's History of the Russian Revolution, read it carefully. That's what he observes, you know, when he was writing his book. He wanted to get with statements that workers had made in the thick of the fights, you know, things they remembered. And he says, you know, he gives an explanation for why he doesn't have from the rank and file. He wrote a book when he went to all the enemies of the Bolsheviks, and from the Bolsheviks too, to show there were two sides to it, all right. But he deplores the idea, you know, and deplores the fact that there is little that comes from the workers, because he said, when you're in a revolution, he said, the muse doesn't sit on the shoulders of men who are active. That is, they never make the record, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Then
an average worker...
Only somebody with a memory like Jack here could go through it.
Yeah.
There's nine-tenths of what you say here only comes back to me now.
Yeah.
I've long ago forgotten those kind of things.
Ray, you remember the morning we were down to Strutware? Well, one of the mornings.
Yeah.
The morning that you got the hell beat out of you.
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah.
They had the bullets lined up.
Mm.
Poor Skogie.
Yeah.
They had the police. Ray had already been, you were in the paddy wagon in the hospital that by
that
time.
They surrounded me with six or seven cops on a stairway where they had a door between them and there was a street. And they used their clubs not this way. They just jammed me lit with it. With the end of their clubs around my belly, and they broke three, four ribs on next to my backbone here.
And that's the day. There was another.
They threw me on a table.
There was another piece of Farrell's ingenuity.
Oh yes.
That
those
afternoon,
things happened all the time.
That afternoon, I had the defense guard called in, and everybody that was a captain in the defense guard, for the most part, was a truck driver.
Yeah.
So Farrell got a hold of everybody he could and everybody he could send out to contact people. And everybody was to drive their truck, regardless of where you were, drive your truck down there and create a traffic jam about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's exactly what happened. Every guy went down, semi, straight jobs, big trucks, piled out, took the keys with them.
Yeah.
What can the police do?
Where at?
Right down the heart of the city, on 6th Avenue South and 6th Street South and 11th and 12th Avenue.
Yeah.
No, 9th and 10th at what?
Right
on Chicago Avenue.
He's up to 6th Avenue.
That was the Strutware, what do you call it?
Were you on strike down there?
No, but the hosiery workers
were. We were defending him.
So
stopping him from moving out of the city.
I see.
So what happened that afternoon? We figured they were going to have to do something, so they... That's the morning they dumped Ray, so in retaliation, we were down there. And everybody that could get a truck down there. I was working for the union at the time, so we didn't have any trucks to drive. But we were down there, so everybody come up and they parked their truck. You see, pretty soon there was the police were blocked off, they couldn't do anything. Because here there's these big trucks, you couldn't push them. 15, 20 ton of freight on some of them, nothing on the others, but they were there.
Yeah.
No keys in them. How are you going to move a Big Mac truck? It's standing there. Huh? Where's the driver? I don't know. It's never, nobody knew nothing. See? And they got these finks in the plant. And what are we going to do with them? We got to get them out. And what did they
do? Let them out.
They got all the cops they could muster.
Yeah.
You see? But they couldn't come down because of this barricade of trucks and cars and everything. So they decided they're going to march them up 7th Street.
Yeah.
You remember that march?
Well, that's up 7th Street to Dayton.
Right up to the Dayton Company.
The biggest...
biggest department store in town. And the biggest fink in town.
Yeah.
He was contributing more money than anybody. He went to church on Sunday morning and he prayed. And he went in the basement of the Church of the Redeemer and he donated $25,000 to equip the special deputies in May of 1934 to break our heads.
Yeah.
The next day, and it didn't take. They got their heads broke. But the funny part of it was, this was months later.
Now explain it. They were marching the finks out of the...
Well, they had to get them out of the plant.
Yeah.
See, in the morning, in that morning, they dumped Ray.
We
took Ray to the hospital or to jail, I forget which. Well, we heard about it. That was in the morning you got her.
Yeah, I got her.
Early in the morning, when the shift was going in.
Yeah.
I see.
See? The shift was going in that morning.
I wanted to get the picket line closer to where they were going in, and I said, "Come on, we had to go through a hedge."
You were back a block from where we were, and at that time
they separated me from the rest of them, and the cops got a hold of me and took me into the building. You know,
and
that's where they worked with me. in the building.
And they had a line, a block down on the other end. This was a big plant. It was a block in a block square.
Uh-huh.
The city block square. It was a big plant, 6-7 stories high. Struck War Knitting Company.
Uh-huh.
And it was an old Prussian Dutchman runner, John A. Struthers.
Yeah.
And he was strutting too, before we turned to on him. But anyway, when you look back, it was laughing. It was serious then. And what they done, they had assembled the Fink someplace else. And they brought them in on streetcars that morning. And the streetcars were double headers, that is, one streetcar pulling another. Well, they were like interurban trains.
Yeah, yeah.
They brought them up to the corner, and they had them lined up there. And the cops were standing shoulder to shoulder, and they all had a nightstick. So we were all standing out there, Harry DeBoer and myself and Fritzy Snyder and Carl Scoglund and Henry Schultz.
Yeah.
And we said, well, we're going to have to do something. We can't let them Finks get in. So we went out and we says, what's the battle cry going to be? Well, we didn't know that. You had to have some signal. One guy can't charge alone.
Yeah.
So we says, the next Fink that smiles, we'll charge him, just like a football deal. Well, Scotty didn't know about it. Harry DeBoer and I and Fritz Snyder and George Drion and somebody else, we made this up.
Yeah.
And Scoggy and Stumps and Henry Schultz were standing there. You know? And here come one of these Finks, and we made the point that we'd go, we'd take it next to this sergeant, that Frank Bleed was a sergeant, because he didn't have a stick.
Yeah.
He says, "We'll, when the next Fink that comes to him and smiles, we'll give him the business." So we hit that line, and these bulls weren't prepared for us, the four of us.
Yeah.
And we charged him, and we clobbered this one Fink, and we ran. Well, the police couldn't break ranks, and they didn't dare shoot, because they'd shot into the Finks and the crowd, and they didn't have orders. Well, they'd already got a hold of Ray and beat him up, take him to the paddy wagon. So then Farrell started organizing the defense guard, and the truck started piling up, and everybody coming out and bugging things up. About 4 o'clock in the afternoon, they were faced with the problem, what to do with these Finks.
Yeah. Yeah. Streetcar couldn't even get through.
Yeah, the streetcars could. That was all. They were down the block.
I see.
We didn't block the right-of-way a streetcar.
Mm-hmm.
But we blocked every other avenue. And the only place was open was 7th Street.
Yeah, right.
So, we can only speculate what the strategy was.
Yes.
But it turned out that our speculations was correct.
Yeah,
they figured they'd get all these Finks together, 300-400 of them, mm-hmm. surround them with all the police they could get,
uh-huh.
and march them uptown and turn them loose in the rush hour in the city.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. But we didn't know where they were going.
We found out
before it was over. And down the street they went. And we right behind them and on the sidewalk and everything. And you see, they didn't have enough cops to keep these guys surrounded like a hen and her chickens.
Yeah.
And at the same time, pursue anybody that clobbered them.
Yeah.
So you'd run in and clobber one of them Finks and get back in the sidelines again. The cops couldn't do nothing to you. Because the cop had learned something in 34, that if he got lost in that crowd, he didn't get out.
Yeah.
And that wasn't too far back, was it, really? Yeah. If you'd have seen that video in 34, that would have got laying there. Because the cop's got a uniform on. Everybody knows who he is.
Yeah.
And you're just a working stiff. Everybody's got different clothes, see?
Yeah.
The cop stands out like a Negro in a crowd of white people, see? Everybody's after it. So we started. Well, when the police got up to 7th and Nicollet, they must have told these people where to go.
Get inside.
They get inside, and they all ran into the Dayton Company. And we went behind them.
They followed right in, yeah.
And we found
that goddamn store.
We just about tore that store apart. If it wasn't for the Finks in there, most of the guys were veterans of the 34 strike.
Yeah.
And they remembered old George Draper Dayton.
Yeah.
And they done a little job on him. And one of them went out the door with some stuff they didn't bring in either.
Once the Finks got into the store, how could you tell which one was Finks?
Well, you didn't. You just clobbered everybody. You just hit anybody that was handy.
You had counters.
The whole army is going to protect you, going to get one of them.
They did everything.
Yeah. And they were screaming and hollering. But you see, he asked a question now. Now, the way it struck me and a couple of more, I think.
Uh-huh.
The Fink knew we were after it.
Yeah, he'd run.
He was screaming.
Yeah,
and the people that come in, they were startled.
They didn't know enough to run.
Yeah, they didn't know what was happening. So he kind of marked himself, and we give some of them some awful beatings.
Oh,
that was a terrible thing.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Did they come back to work the next day?
Of course not. They closed the plant up.
Well, the plan threatened to move us.
That brings another story.
That's another story. We stopped them doing that, too.
But you remember how we stopped them that day when they were moving with the U.S. Marshals? They were going down someplace in Missouri.
Yeah.
They couldn't get a trucking company.
They were going to move to St. Joe.
That's right. They couldn't get a trucking company in the city of Minneapolis to put their trucks down. They tried for months to move out. And we said to the trucking company, you won't take your trucks down there? Fine. How many are you going to need? Six or seven? Oh, that's all right. But that's the end of you in the trucking business. Because there won't be another man drive one of your trucks in this city again or any place else. So they brought some U.S. Marshals in.
They had to go down to La Crosse, Wisconsin.
That's right. They went 110 miles and more to get trucks. And they were some Army surplus trucks or something. And they had a siding.
But who was driving them?
United States Marshals.
Yeah. United States Marshals?
Yes, they couldn't get nobody in the city to move them out. Here was a company that had closed its plant. Closed the plant. They were selling out. They were threatening to move to St. Joe, Missouri.
That's right.
And they were months. They couldn't get moved. Finally, they beseeched somebody, and they got the hold of the United States Attorney General, and he sent in some marshals. And they got two truckloads down.
Right.
And they were down there on that old Milwaukee sidetrack on 3rd Street by Skellett's Warehouse. And we couldn't get at them, and we couldn't find nothing to throw. And somebody, here come a milk wagon. Remember that?
No, we went in
and we got these cases. That's the days they used to peddle milk in quart bottles.
Yeah.
And you know, you take a 2-pound quart, there's 2 pounds in a quart of milk bottle, and you get behind it and give it a heave, and it hits somebody.
Yeah.
Jesus, it hurts you just like a brick.
Yeah.
And down they were coming. We threw a whole load of that day. But that ended the marshals moving that outfit out.
Yeah.
You threw the milk at the marshal?
We couldn't have nothing else to throw. And here was a guy on his route. He was peddling. And some guy come up with the idea, Jesus, let's get them milk bottles. And away went the milk bottles.
They were a nice handhold.
Well, you can let them go, they'll go like a football. Some of them, the top flies out, then you lose.
Were the marshals armed?
Sure, but they couldn't shoot.
Yeah.
Who's scared of a gun? They'd use guns or us in Minneapolis. We figured guns are only dangerous if somebody's shooting them. You can carry them around forever. They ain't going to hurt you.
Well, they couldn't get anybody else to drive either.
They couldn't get nobody to move.
See, the marshal is not supposed to drive a truck, you know.
Yeah.
Not supposed to do anything. He's supposed to get somebody and he ordered them to do it.
Yeah.
But the guy that he ordered to do that, they tried that. They had him in a garage over there.
Yeah.
And Bill Brown and a few others went over and told these guys, you want to drive that truck, you better get out here and join me in. And they just left him and told the marshal, I'm not going to drive this truck anymore.
They brought the trucks in?
Yeah.
They couldn't even get a truck.
No.
They couldn't rent or hire or buy a truck in the city of Minneapolis. Because the minute we had an espionage system in Minneapolis in those years that I don't believe an employer could go to bed with his wife without the maid calling us up and telling us about it. Huh?
Yeah.
Gee, that was something.
Knew everything was going on.
Well, if we didn't, it didn't take us long to find out.
They always had somebody that was bringing information.
That's right. We had a key somebody someplace in every spot.
They'd go through, they'd wait until the bosses left, and they'd go through the wastebasket and pick up letters or letters that had been started and some little errand or something. They'd pick up the carbons of it and stuff like that. And now they show us what they were talking about.
Sam Oleski was the president of the Minneapolis Transfer Association. And I used to work for Minneapolis Van and Sawyer.
They brought down a lot of useless stuff, but they were with the union, you know.
Art Spooner and myself used to go down to Oleski's office at night.
Yeah.
Art Spooner was one of the road drivers.
Yeah.
And Art would call me up and he'd say, come on, and we'd go down.